Beloved MTV VJ, music exec, and radio personality Matt Pinfield has spent almost four decades in front of and behind the mic. He signed bands, interviewed Beatles, and had songs written about him. But now, he's having a different conversation. He's talking with friends and supporters across the entertainment industry about their journey and how he's found his voice again, being open about his recovery. This is Sound, Sobriety, and Success.
Welcome to another episode of Sound, Sobriety, and Success. If you're a frequent or first-time listener of the podcast, you've heard the intro of our sponsor, the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Center. Now, today's guests from this fantastic organization, and thank you guys for joining us, are Captain Paul Swain and Norman McKenzie. Guys, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
So I want to talk to you because, you know, I'm so happy you were able to join us today because Major Donald Shepard from ARC joined us back in November, and he shared his amazing journey with us as well as educating our listeners on the Salvation Army's ARC program. And most people are aware of the Salvation Army as a charitable organization, but not necessarily how it's involved with recovery and rehabilitation, which is such an amazing thing you do. So can you start by explaining truly what that is for those people that are listening and checking it out for the first time, and some of the great things you do? Can you start, Captain Paul?
Yeah, you know, I'm right with you. I mean, my whole life, right? You saw the kettles at Christmas time, which most people recognize, or even the thrift stores. I remember one time when my dad lost another job from drugs and alcohol. You know, we ended up having to buy clothes for the winter at the Salvation Army thrift store. But you don't hear about this work that is the adult rehabilitation centers, but it actually goes way back to our founder, Catherine and William Booth, when they decided to, they started the Salvation Army there in London in 1865, and they wanted to invade America. They heard that things were bad and that people needed help. And so they sent their own daughter, actually, and a few soldiers and a little bit of money, and sent her in, and they landed on the shores of New York. And she did like her father taught her, you know, just got a pawn shop and kind of cleaned it up, and then got a wagon and got a horse and started going up and down the streets of New York, picking up alcoholics and bringing them back to the Salvation Army, because she knew what her father knew. And that was, you can't tell people God loves them when they're inebriated, if they're hungry, if they're suffering. So you got to, what he called soup, soap, and salvation, bring them back, get them cleaned up, give them something to eat, show them the love. And then you can tell them and show them how God loves you. Well, it was said if you were to be picked up on the wagon, Evangeline Booth's wagon, their daughter, and brought back, and then if you showed back up on the streets two or three days later, where they'd say, oh, we see you fell off the wagon, Evangeline's wagon. So, you know, we have a long history. That's where they coined that phrase, falling off the wagon. And so, you know, I just have this long history of having a heart for those that are suffering in addiction, especially when it takes you to the place of losing all family and hope. And it's, you know, it's 12-step based, because the 12 steps are basically just baby steps into spiritual awakening and how you find God. I say, you know, the 12 steps, Alcoholics Anonymous, is just the Bible dumbed down for people like me so I could find God. And it's been in our, I think the ARC specifically was named the Men's Social for the longest, and then it became the Adult Rehabilitation Center, because we no longer just helped men get clean and sober. We now also help, like here in San Diego, we also help men and women in recovery. So
I think that's great, you know, and again, me working my 12-step program and being in recovery has saved my life, changed my life, gave me a spiritual journey the way that it needed to do, you know. And so, hey, Norman, I'd like to talk to you. We're with Norman McKenzie and Captain Paul Swain. Norman, talk to me. I know that you both have had your journeys with, you know, addiction and now recovery and sobriety, and I thank God for that. Can you talk to me about yours in particular?
Oh, well, yeah, thank you. Good question. You know, mine started, you know, it started when I was younger, you know, a lot of, you know, drug use and smoking weed and alcohol, and it graduated up to methamphetamine and gambling that really sent me in a spiral out of control for almost 36 years. And when it finally came down to, you know, I'd burned every bridge and I had nowhere to go, you know, I ended up homeless in San Diego on the streets, man, like right downtown. You know, I was the guy that was just sitting there on the sidewalk that you would pass by and not pay a lick of attention to. You just keep on walking. And my family would answer my call, but my family would say, you got to go find some help yourself. You burn every bridges, right, in your addiction. That's what we do as addicts and alcoholics and things like that. And nobody would really take my call, but the Salvation Army took my call. They welcomed me to their home almost 13 years ago.
That's amazing. And so that journey took you now to actually becoming a part of it, which is being of service and helping other men and women, which is amazing.
Yeah. And so, you know, I went into that program, and then you just were saying that exact thing. And, you know, I came in and a broken spirit, a broken, you know, broken everything. I was a mess. And the Salvation Army, you know, they loved them. They told me, don't beat yourself up so much. You know, here's, we have this and we have this. But most importantly is we love you for who you are. And here's the second chance that I got. And Mike, I ran with that second chance big time. You know, I went through the program 6 months, completed it. You know, I got myself a little job. I went to one of our bridge houses, and I became the resident manager of this bridge house for 6 months. And then an opportunity opened up to be able to come back into that very house that saved my life as an employee, as an assistant resident manager, which I stayed for a year. Then was a resident manager for another year. Then I went for an intake, I mean, program secretary, another part of the Army, another year and a half. And then I got to be the intake coordinator for a good 4 or 5 years. And that was where, you know, the give back or being able to help folks really took off for me, because then I went out into those streets and into the jails and into the ravines where the homeless folks are and where everybody was, told my story, and now began to help the same people where I once was find that same new chance, that new second chance at recovery and a new way to live.
I love that, because, you know, you doing that and going and reach, doing outreach to give people that second chance. From, like, I love the name of the program, Second Chance. The fact that you're getting out there. And I also love the part of your story where you ended up being, you know, one of the resident, coordinators there, one of the guys who was actually there in the house where you got sober and you got to see and help and share your experience, strength, and hope with these other men and women there. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to give that back. I think it's great.
Amen. That's all part of the 12 steps.
Absolutely.
Right? That's where we get to do that. And what's special about the Salvation Army, the second chance that it gives, is it takes the 12-step program, Mike, and includes the spiritual part of it, which the book is about. But then we include that. We bring Jesus. We bring God into that picture. And that there is what really launches your recovery and your chances at continued sobriety into a realm that you would not even dream of.
I agree, because, you know, it's really all about that faith that gives you the strength to keep going on. That faith, strength, and hope, you know, is so important. And that we share that. And can you tell me about your experience, Captain Paul Swink? I'd like to know about yours. You mentioned your father with drugs and alcohol, too. So was it, you know, a family thing? Can you give us some background on that?
Yeah, I come from a long line of drug addicts and alcoholics. And, you know, I was born in the 60s in the summer of love. Kind of inherited the gene, I guess you could say. And, you know, I'd been to some other I done really good actually for a wife, because my mom kind of got clean and sober early in life. She found the Lord, and just the new movie that's out, Jesus Revolution, she actually has pictures of that tent, of that baptisms down at Corona Del Mar, and just all those. That was when the Lord got a hold of her life, and she literally stopped drinking and partying. I remember she tells me of a time, you know, I just remember every day it seemed like when I was a kid, you know, about as soon as the sun started going down, all of a sudden all the furniture would get moved in the house to the hallway or whatever, and a drum set would get set up, and people with guitars and no shoes would come in. Next thing we, you know, their smoke level in the room would start lowering down, and I'd try to stay below the smoke level, and I would naturally get a contact high, and then I'd take sips off people's beers. But I remember when my mom got clean and sober and she had found the Lord, she's like, I went up to her and I told her one day, I said, you know what, I was 5 years old, and I told her, I said, you know what, I'm going to quit drinking too. That's just, today's my day, I'm going to have my last beer. But unfortunately, that wasn't the truth. Come after high school, started drinking, just, you know, like you do on the weekends and stuff. But it was really the military. When I joined the U.S. Army, I really embraced my illustrious drinking career and started getting in trouble and hitting the drunk tanks and doing all that stuff. And then once I got out of the military, I was working in a warehouse, and I just noticed that a lot of guys were doing a lot of overtime, and we were making a lot of money when you'd hit that overtime. And so I wanted to be able to do that. And then they would go skiing and surfing and do all this stuff. I was here in Southern California, and they had these lives. And I thought to myself, how do you do that? And I found out it was crystal meth. And so I begged them for the longest. I said, man, give me some of that. Let me try some. You know, we're going to do them. We were doing like 17-hour days. You know, we just rake in these huge checks. And finally, my buddy, after like 2 weeks of just me nagging him, he says, Paul, I don't want to give you this stuff. I don't want to let you try it. And it was crank then. He would just snort in lines of crank. And he goes, he pulls over on the forklift and he just chalks one out. He says, Paul, I hate to give this to you because I know you're going to love it. And you know what? He was absolutely right. I just loved it. I just, wow. And it just like 7 years just flew by. And quite frankly, just, you know, was a scream. And then came the 7 years of famine, right? It was like 14 years total addicted to speed. And then the first 7 were great, I always say. And then the second 7 were just the most miserable years of my life. And, you know, I ended up at the end coming to the place where I tried to take my own life and just became hopeless, lost everything I ever cared about or anybody that cared about me. I had pushed away, and I had tried a lot of places, and then, you know, finally it was a nudge from the judge, recommended the Salvation Army, and I had no idea. I thought a thrift store or, you know, ringing bells in a Santa suit. I had no idea what it was about. I didn't realize that recovery was woven in their DNA, and they loved people like us. And yeah, you know, told me you got to get out 72 hours when I was on Methuen in jail for 17 days to sober you up. And you have 72 hours to get to the Anaheim ERC. And if you show up back here, I'm going to send you upstate for 14 years. I had accumulated a bunch of charges that summer, and I was basically out of control. And, you know, it was the best gift she could ever gave me. Judge Pamela Isles, I'll forever be in debt to her. She gave me the motivation it took, because my mom still has my first letter. Because when you're at the Salvation Army for the first month, you can only communicate via a snail mail. You can't have a cell phone or anything. So my mom kept that first letter. And on the first line, you know what it says? It says, I'm here and I hate it. And it was, you know, it was a big change, right? Going from 100% of doing whatever I want to do and not caring about anybody around me to now having to start do some basic self-care things that also involved, you know, being aware of the people around you. And it was the first time in a long time, and Senior Soldier Norm here just alluded to it. You know, it'd been a long time since I'd really experienced love. And so, you know, I looked at the building and just the level of excellence and what they offered as far as our bedrooms and the food service, and just everyone seemed to, well, I thought they were up to something at first, but I found out they were genuinely cared. And then I found out how much they actually make. And I was like, are these people on drugs? They're doing this for that, for minimum wage. But man, it was just the love overwhelmed me. And then, and to be honest with you, I hated the fact when I found out that it was, I was okay with the Christian aspect, that it was Bible-based, you know, the Salvation Army, it's right built in, our middle name. But when I found out that it was 12-step based, I was furious, because I had been in the drunk tank a few times and gotten some trouble along the way where the judges prior to, you know, the one that nudged me into the program, they had sent me to do AA meetings, you know, so many AA meetings. And I would get in those AA meetings, it was basically a bunch of people that were complaining about how terrible the drinking was and how they'd lost everything. And I was like, that guy, I was still in my 7 good years. So I was like, that's not me. I'm not like you. I don't have a problem. I do it whenever I want to do it. And so when I got there, I obviously had a lot of growing to do, and I finally got so, I was kind of, not kind of a smart aleck. I was a big time smart aleck and had something to say about everything. And so I started making fun of it in the meetings and in and after the meetings. And then some guys said some stuff and put me in my place. And I was like, dang, that actually sounds, you know, solid, and kind of checked me. So I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to read this book. I'm going to read this book from the front to the back, a whole thing, Alcoholics Anonymous, so I can properly tear it apart in public, right? I need to be able to find it. But lo and behold, man, I got serious. I read that thing and started making it part of my daily routine. And by the time I was done, I was like, I was all in. I just thought, man, this is simple. And, you know, obviously the day to day and the journey wasn't simple every, you know, all the time, but it was a simple, laid out, tangible plan that one described my illness to the T, but also let me know I wasn't alone. And actually, I was actually worse than the guys that I said I wasn't like. And as I started to just, you know, have that, admit my life was powerless and, you know, my life had become unmanageable, and I was powerless over my dependencies and my life had become unmanageable, and that humility set in, I started to experience the change, and I started to look for God in a special way. And I knew that my mom, I'd reflect back on this Jesus Revolution moment in the 60s when Calvary Chapel was getting its start. And I just remember the massive change in my mom's life, because I mean, the parties were all the time, and it was just a wild time, and always drugs and a lot of drinking. But I remember one night she went to this bed with this guy named Mike, and he's a big partier in there a lot. And I liked Mike. He was a cool guy. He always treated me good, let me have a hit of, you know, drink of his beer every now and then. But one time she went to bed with Mike, and then the next morning she woke up with Scott. So I went and I asked her, I said, "Hey, Mom, where's Mike? I like Mike. I don't even like, you know, Scott's new guy. Who's this guy?" And that was kind of the moment that turned her to like, man, my son's recognizing that life's out of control. But I really knew and saw my mom, because I was her son. I saw behind the scenes. She didn't just get clean and sober. She changed dramatically. There was no more Mike Scott moments. There was no more the furniture disappearing in my house all night. It was a total change. And I saw that there was this path to God through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was this spiritual side that I just sensed was dead inside me. I mean, I just wanted to die. I was so desperate. And I actually tried to take my life 2 months before I even came to the ARC. Praise God, I got arrested. But I just said, you know, I want to know Jesus like that. I want to know Jesus the way my mom did, that it changed her whole life. And we were able to have a stable home from that point forward, at least on my mom's side of things. My dad just got clean and sober about 5 years ago. And so for me, that day I walked into the Salvation Army will be 19 years in June. So, you know, I'm just saying, I'm finally just going to break out of my teens. So I got a good foundation going now, but I just thank God for the Salvation Army, putting it in my life, and for, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the opportunity. And you know, I think it's just, you know, I'm reading the Bible right now about Jesus and then all the people around him kind of wanting to know who's the greatest in the kingdom. And he says, you see the people serving, those are the greatest. And you look at that 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, same thing. And you find out that service is the key, right? You're being true to yourself. You're becoming humble and teachable. But then that last piece, and I think some guys stop before they get there, and that's why they relapse, is then the service, right? The looking, pulling another one out, being of service to our fellow brothers and sisters, not just suffering, but just anybody, every opportunity that God provides. So it's been a life-changing thing for me. I just feel so, you know, I had businesses, especially in those 7 years. I opened a locksmith business in Orange County, and I was making $250,000 a year. And I had, of course, a lot of friends that go along with that money and all that happens with that. But, you know, and I had a landscaping business. I had that job at Albertsons where I was union, and I had two kids born for free. Basically, the benefits were so good. But you know what? Now I make less than I ever made in my life. I have less than I've ever made in my life. And somehow, it's just miraculous. I feel like I have more than I've ever had in my whole life. And I feel right in the center of God's will for my life. And I really believe and know I was built on purpose for a purpose. And I'm living out that purpose through service and love. And it's a beautiful thing.
It's an incredible thing. Service, I related to so many things you talked about because, you know, I remember discovering crank when it was called crank for the first time. You know what I mean? Cause and you know, and I knew that deal, you know, I was a club DJ and, you know, playing the whole like alternative music thing happened and new wave and rock, and I was spinning in clubs and I wanted to stay up as late as possible and more, you know what I mean? That's what I was doing. Exactly. And I loved rock and roll lifestyle, but yeah. And it got the best of me, you know, but I think it's great when you talk about, you know, looking at that step thing and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
That's right.
Something that really, really all of it hit for me. But living by the steps and the principles has made my life so much better. I feel more full, more fulfilled in every way.
Yeah.
And being of service. And I've got to talk to you about it. Norman, tell us more about the recently launched Second Chance campaign.
Oh, my, great question. This is a movement, an awareness campaign that is just really something to be a part of. Basically, second chances are just that, giving second chances, you know, to maybe be there for your mom, maybe to be there for your son that you hadn't been there for 20 years, or in my case, 36 years for my daughter, to be able to meet your grandson that you never got a chance to meet because, again, you were out there in the street and, not able to, you know, to engage or to even talk to them. And second chances is all about reuniting families and loved ones and giving folks a second chance at life. For me, one of the biggest second chances I got was going back to school. Right? Now I'm working on a bachelor's degree now. I'm a year away from getting this. Right? I would have never had that chance if it wasn't for the South Reservation Army and the second chance it gave me. One of the biggest things as well is reuniting with my daughter, who's 26 years old, who I had no connection with when I came into the program, and it took a while, but I got that second chance to reunite with my daughter, and I have a relationship with my granddaughter.
I think that's absolutely beautiful, Norman.
And
you
that's
know,
what it's about. And I want you to sit in your chair there for a minute and picture this big board that has on the top of it, a big red board that says second chances on it. And you get a chance to go up on that board and write what your second chances is. And then actually have an opportunity to get that second chance.
Yeah. And I just think that's such a beautiful and incredible program. Because, I mean, by getting clean and sober, and really becoming a part of the program, the spiritual program, and working the steps and the principles and living by them every day, I mean, sirs, my life has become definitely more fulfilled. And, you know, I experienced so many of those different things, that lost that disconnection with family. And I have two daughters I'm closer to than ever now because they feel good. They can trust me now. And that was one of those things that, you know, my daughters didn't know whether they're going to get a call that I was dead. I mean, that's really that's what they were living with. Right. And it's such a beautiful thing, Norman, with your grandchildren and your daughter. I love that, you know?
Yes. And so we take this is a board, and we take this out in the community. I have a little board and a little art easel that I take. And folks can look at it and see it. And there's a QR code that you can click on it, and you can go see stories of a lot of our graduates here and the reunification they've had with their families and their kids. And then you can see a way that you can also become a part of this movement. You can become everybody can become a part of this movement, this awareness, be able to spread that message. And we here at the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Centers are here to spread this message, not only here in San Diego, but across the entire United States and worldwide if needed.
It's amazing. And I'm so glad you guys... Now I know the origin of Fell Off the Wagon, too. I mean, I learned that. That's all the way back then. That's incredible to me. You know, I've always wondered, you know, where that came from, and now I know, which is beautiful. Absolutely. You guys know what it's like. I mean, at first, I can so relate to that, too. I'll tell you, Paul, was that, you know, in the beginning, it was working for you until it doesn't, you know, and then all of a sudden it starts to steal from you and take away everything you worked for, love, and care about.
Yeah.
And slowly erode that and your self-respect and, everything from self-esteem to self-respect and just the beauty of letting people know, you know, realizing that you are lovable and that you can be loved and that you can turn your life around is just the most incredible thing. Talk to me also about how people can actually also donate and invest, all right, and make donations to the program, because I just love that you can. And there, you know, there's a really great video that I saw that we're going to direct people to. I will at the end of the show of the Second Chance video, because I loved it. I watched that, and it's something that people can watch, but to get a real feel for the work that you guys do. I just think, how many people are in the organization down there with you?
So in the one here in San Diego, and we serve all of San Diego County, so it's 100, we got to have beds for 120 men and for a little under a dozen women. We're currently in the process of building a larger women's program because our women's program stays full, as you can imagine, because we just have limited beds. And so there's, constantly people, you know, we have a waiting list, but we're looking at, and we're in the process of building a 32-bed facility for the women. So that, you know, that takes 7 thrift stores. That's how it's funded, through donations. You know, this offer, I think one of the pieces, you know, that is worth highlighting is this is a no cost program. And so we typically are the last house on the block for that reason, right? Because people that have money or have insurance, and when insurance runs out, your family's run out, your house has been mortgaged a second time, and you got nowhere else to go, you go for the free guy on the end of the block. And it just so happens to have the highest success rate, right? We got a straight out in the basic first level, you have a just under a 30% success rate, which is the highest in the nation. And then if you stick around, and if you, to put that in perspective, it's kind of like a batting average in baseball. You know, for most programs, government ran programs, private ran programs, the success rate is half that, about 13%. For government ran programs, it's half that again, so 7 to 8% success rate. So less than one out of every 10 people graduating, or less than two people graduating out of 10 that go in through the paid programs. But ours, almost three out of every 10. And then if they stay on for our reentry and further program, why they their success rate goes as high as if they get a job, stick with us and get a job. We help them get a job first, and then second, we help them get housing. The success rate goes up to a staggering, an astonishing 86% success rate. So almost nine out of 10 people that come through and finish and complete, and then even do the transition with us, will stay clean and sober for the rest of their life, which is huge.
Beautiful.
Thechance2.org. Thechance2.org is the place to give and find out more. See that great commercial, what a minute and a half long kind of video spot they did. And just like you said, it's just it's a powerful thing. You know, we talk about testimony, of course, the power of testimony, you know, but really what the Second Chance to a campaign is about is a nextimony, where, okay, we know where we've been and the power where we've been. We draw from that. We don't focus on that, and we're not stuck in that because we're not going that way. We're not looking back. We're moving forward. But we, in this Second Chance too, we're focused on what's next. Okay, now what's next? What's possible? So the Second Chance too, right? And just thank my mom for showing up no matter how much it hurt to finally meet my grandson. He's 8 now, right? That's one of the things that were written on the board. And it's a, you know, it's a powerful thing to have a vision, right? What does the Bible say? I remember one time I heard Metal Lark Lemon telling his testimony from drugs and alcohol, and he talked about, you know, the Bible verse in Proverbs says, without a vision, the people perish. You know, you got to know what you're going. So what's next? Now, what wasn't possible before with drugs and alcohol is now possible. So what is that? And hey, now let's go after it. And because drugs and alcohol aren't going to keep that from you and take any more. Now you can get that life back that you always wanted and couldn't have, or even that you can't even imagine. So the Second Chance has been a powerful catalyst, if you will. I think that's the best analogy, because it which is kind of adding it to all aspects of outreach now, because it's that power of nextimony. And think about this, Mr. Matt. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? You're supporting $400, $600, $800 a month habit with no job, no car, no house, no friends, no resources. And then somehow you survive, not just for a month or two, but years, right? And then these people that come to us, these people are geniuses. These people are gifted. These people, if you channel half that energy in the right direction, these people are going to be unstoppable. And they're going to take on, they're going to do things they never imagined were possible, that drugs promised they could give, but actually could never deliver. It's just getting, hey, their giftedness, their abilities, their what they can accomplish is the sky's the limit. The problem is their talents can take them where their character can't sustain them. So we get in here and we give them the tools like the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We give them that vision of what's next and the Second Chance too. And man, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. I can't believe I'm in here. I'm the captain of the Salvation Army. And first of all, you know, it's a $14 million a year budget helping literally thousands of people a year, and bringing not just the people that come to us, but their whole families back from the dead. And because you don't just go down yourself, you take your whole family down. So to see whole families, even businesses, you know, we have alumni running taco shops downtown and hotels and just all the just endless. I could tell you success story after success story of they had the Second Chance and they went off and they're just doing amazing things.
And I think what is so beautiful. And I also love that your mother and father both are clean and sober now after all that period. Right?
You and me both.
It's great. So you can have that kind of relationship with them, which is great. And they can know the family. But it is absolutely so true. And, you know, Norman, it was interesting when you were talking about like the 6 month program. And of course it's so much better, you know, when you don't have that, you're using snail mail, but it's like, it's a way to get refocused and kind of change your life and concentrate on changing. Plus your body's going through so many changes, you know, in that first month too. But you mentioned a 6 month program. What is the average length of the program when you guys do the Second Chance of Salvation Army? Are there different tiers? Or tell me about that.
Well, you know, it's the first 6 months, the initial 6 months is the program and completing the program. But we at the Salvation Army, we take it to another level, right? Because we don't want to be like, well, you can graduate and see you later. Have a nice day, right? No, we need to build on their sobriety. We need to give them opportunities, those that want to be able to do that. So it's actually 6 to 12 months. So basically after you complete, you can then apply for reentry at whatever center you're at. You can stay into the reentry phase where now you're going to learn tools on job searching, and maybe you needed to get your IDs or social security cards reestablished. You may be able to go to homeless court. We have a great community partner called Homeless Court, and it's usually in a lot of counties and cities and stuff like that where they can go and, you know, have tickets being pulled and cleared and stuff like that because they completed the program. And they're going to go through all that phase, right? And then they're going to start job searching, right? And then they can get a job, and then they can continue on even more. They can stay here for another month or so till they get enough funds built up to either go to a sober living or to one of our bridge houses. So we have transitional houses here that's connected to our program. We have two of them. One of them right now is being used by our females, but we have one of our main bridge houses where our guys will then move into their bridge house, which is basically a sober living, and it's really much less expensive to be able to live there. They still stay connected to us. They have some a little bit less as far as accountability on things, but they're still going to get drug tests and some things and come to church and associate with the folks at the center and stuff like that. And they can continue on there for another year or more, right? And so in the meantime, they're saving money. They're building their foundation in their recovery. They're out there now, hopefully at this point, you know, worked the 12 steps, and they're out there sponsoring guys back in the house and then taking that message further. And one of the further things that we now have connected with the Salvation Army is a lot of trade schools and different opportunities where our men who are graduates can actually go to. And these are, like, there's a culinary schools up in Napa, and then there's also one up in Lodi. There's some other ones up in the central and northwest where our guys, because they graduated our program, can go there, and we're going to help support them further. So not only are they just going to get a job, but they're going to get a career. And so now you're going to have a guy going in, and he's going to be the professional that's leading the place, right? And little do they know that this is also an ARC graduate, as we call it, a Sally boy, right? So this is the one that's out there leading the thing now, right? And so what you perceive isn't always the reality of what is, right? So you might look at someone and you have no idea that this guy's what we were walking like 15 years clean and sober, and shoot, he used to be on the street, and he was screaming and yelling at the world one day, but now look at, he came to the Salvation Army, he walked through this 6 months, kept it going, got that second chance, and now he's out there, a productive member of the community and helping others gain that same thing.
I think it's fantastic, you know, and so what is the best way for someone looking for the help to get in touch with Salvation Army ARC? Would that be to go to, you know, the website, tinyearl.com/SalArmyARC?
Yes, you could go there.
I probably, you know, if you're here in San Diego, it'd be sandiegoarc.salvationarmy.org. And then, of course, the phone number is 1-800-728-7825. That's 800-728-7825. You can also just go online and look for, you know, the Salvation Army, any of them, and then ask for recovery in San Diego, and it'll take you to our webpage. And that's a great way to apply or find ways to contact us.
Well, I got to tell you how great it is, you know, to have you guys as a sponsor for this podcast, because, you know, I love doing it. I do it for certainty of service. And
thank you for helping keep it going,
guys. It's part of my plan and my program to be of service to other alcoholics and our addicts who struggle like I had and in the past. And I just have so much gratitude, I got to say. I'm so grateful not only to be alive, but to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope with other people, other alcoholics and addicts out there, and see them change their lives. It's the most beautiful thing. And I gotta just say how much I appreciate you guys giving me your time today. It's really great to hear your stories.
Well, thank you, Mr. Matt. I appreciate what you're doing with this podcast. I've had a chance to listen to a couple of them now. It's just a powerful thing. And, you know, just hope we save one more, right? And get them out of that life and get them back to the life that God created them for. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I really want to say it was really, really wonderful to have you here today. So once again, that was Captain Paul Swain and Norman McKenzie from the Salvation Army, ARC. Guys, thank you for taking the time, and really means the world. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us for Sound Sobriety and Success. Hope you're really enjoying the podcast. And if you are checking it out for the first time, please go and listen to some of our past episodes. There's so much hope and faith in those, and just incredible stories of lives being turned around. Make sure that you like the podcast and follow us as well. Thank you so much. Have yourself an incredible day and stay sane and sober. I'll be back with you soon. I'm Matt Pinfield. Take care. If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, Music Cares operates a mental health and addiction recovery program that understands the challenges music professionals face, no matter where they are in their career. Learn more, including if you're eligible, at musiccares.org. That's musiccares.org.
Sound, Sobriety, and Success with Matt Pinfield. Produced by Jake Urbanek. Engineered by Darren Silva. Jerry Ansaldo Booking. Bill Royal Research. Susan Aksu, Marketing Production Assistant. And Laura Keeney, Marketing. Sound, Sobriety, and Success is a Bennstown McVeigh podcast production.